So, today is the last meeting. It is not going to take a lot. I think we will manage fine to talk about this topic. It's another way of doing research, another way that is essentially... Let me fix this. Duplicate. That's the way we want to do it. Once again. Okay. So it's another way of doing research. It's in the late 20th century and 21st century, what happened is we got an incredible tool for doing research, which is computers. And we can do a lot of simulations, doing really good type of investigations using computers. And it saves us a lot of work. I'm sure that both of you, with your work, you also do computer-based simulations. I suspect, I don't know for sure, but you probably have models in which you predict the strength of something in both of your cases, and then you can test it in your laboratory. But computers are an incredible tool. So here in this part, we talk about a very interesting direction of research that they call artificial societies. It is research in several disciplines, mainly disciplines like economics, sociology, disciplines where we are dealing with a big population of people, animals, cars, or whatever. The idea is big populations. It is based on a book written by my good colleague. I would call him friend. In English, you use the word friend much more generously than in Polish. You know that. Friend is, we often would use the word colleague in Poland. But I stayed in his house, so I would call him friend also. He was a doctoral student in my department at Carnegie Mellon. And he was doing work in some work in economics, maybe in pollution. And once he graduated, he got an offer, a job offer, from Joshua Epstein at Brookings Institute. He got that job, and he turned his interests like, I can't say 180%, but really like that. Rob was a very good theoretician and did a lot of work with equations, with modeling. And suddenly, during the job interview, Epstein has, they pronounce it in English, Epstein. In German, you would pronounce it Epstein. He convinced him that this is very interesting line of work. So he spent several years there. And then they wrote together a book, the one that I just showed you. That's the effect of the time that Rob spent in Brookings. Rob is working still in that direction. I really admire his courage because I never had the courage to really change my interests completely. It's a very risky thing. It's much better to just change it slowly, see opportunities and change it slowly. He did it completely 180%, 180 degrees. I guess he got excited about this work. And what is this work exactly? The idea is, let me do a few introductory slides. By the way, I have also a master's student who wrote a master's thesis collaborating with Rob. He defended it last summer. We are still going to work on a paper based on that, also agents. So, a couple of introduction slides. So Herb Simon once said that social sciences are really hard sciences. We usually say that about mathematics, physics, chemistry, engineering, these are hard sciences. And psychology, sociology are soft sciences. But Simon called them hard sciences. Hard in the, this is the double meaning of the word hard. Hard is, of course, like a table is hard, but also the meaning of difficult. And Simon used this meaning of difficult. They are difficult sciences because it's very hard to study social processes Imagine that, you know, it's very easy for us, for engineers, to do experiments with a piece of wood or concrete, but imagine doing experiments with the society. Very, very hard. How do you study that? And typically the work so far was to have models of the society, models that were based on equations. Very often they were systems of difference equations, differential equations, essentially making assumptions, writing that in equations, and then solving them. When doing this, you had to rely on many assumptions. More about it on the next slide. It's difficult to do experimentation, because how do you do experiments with society? Very hard. You have to observe a large collection of people, how they behave, and very difficult. The type of questions that are typically asked is, if an individual does X, the society does Y. For example, in economics, individuals maximize their utility, or firms maximize their profit. That's an assumption. If firms maximize their profits, what happens? Yes. If individuals start drinking more, what happens? If individuals start to be more promiscuous, like, you know, in Western European societies, sexual freedom, what happens? They did experiments on that, by the way, in the Soviet Union. I don't know if you knew that. Right after the Russian Revolution, they announced a complete sexual freedom. Complete. It's a, you know, it's a good idea. A woman should allow any man to have to copulate with her. And it was an experiment that was a grand fiasco. Within a few years, they stopped it with that experiment. They started being conservative again because of things like venereal diseases and essentially breakage of the institution of marriage. In any case, those experiments are difficult, so we cannot conduct those experiments. So how do you translate the individual behavior in the micro world, individual behavior, of people who are so different? Each one of us here is very different, yes? So how can we talk about the society based on one individual? You need to make an assumption, like individual is a man. Good assumption? Not very good, I guess, right? Individual maximizes his utility, has short hair. Whatever. Each of these assumptions is very, not very substantiated, because people are so different. So when doing this research with equations, usually what you do is you make assumptions. Like, you assume that in economics, you assume that every person is a rational actor. Actor has perfect information, is perfectly informed, it has infinite computing capacity, and it maximizes a fixed utility function. So we have some set of preferences, we maximize them. The question is, do you know anyone like this? Do you have perfect information? I don't think so. You just learned about RadioNet, right?
Yeah.
I just learned about, there was something that you said, something about Republika. I didn't know that. So we don't know things. We don't have perfect information. Besides, we have limited time. You don't have the time. Maybe you will find half an hour to test net. Maybe you will not find it. You don't have the time for that, yes? So it's very unrealistic. So perfectly informed individual with infinite computing capacity who maximizes utility function has little relation to human beings, really. So in the classical approaches, they suppress this heterogeneity, so differences between people. They build a model assuming that people are identical. And then they use systems of equations to derive the consequences of this homogeneity, filtering out heterogeneity. Game theory, not the general equilibrium theory, are all focused on static equilibrium, which is not realistic because equilibrium is moving. Yes, things are, they are moving. The price of gold is moving every day, right? Price of silver. They also ignore time dynamics. of course, if you have systems of differential equations, okay, you have the time, but then again, you make assumptions that are assumed to hold throughout the solution. So there is no natural methodology for studying models that are non-equilibrium. And by the way, I may have never shown you that in software like Gini, you can model systems of difference equations. Let me show you that very quickly. Dynamic Bayesian networks, getting the predator-prey model. You may have learned about this in your training, predator and prey, foxes and rabbits, governed by system of two differential equations. These are difference equation forms of that. They describe essentially how the two populations change over time. Let me show you the plot of the number of the number of let's see, where is it? View plots, temporal. Oh, here is the temporal value. So I already started it. I can see essentially how the population of foxes and rabbits change over time, and that's a solution of difference equations. It's a solution that is derived by means of computation. So this is simulation. But it's just stochastic sampling, so it's almost like a solution that you can do analytically. You can do it analytically. By the way, we can do here, we can look at the impact.
Can you show us the...
Pardon?
We have freeze screen.
Oh!
We have the presentation.
It's not frozen, sorry. It's for some reason, my computer does not remember that I want to show my main screen, essentially. Duplicate. Here it is. Okay. So this is a system of difference equations. It shows the solution over time. 300 steps, how the populations of rabbits and foxes changes over time. But again, this is exactly this methodology that you use. You make assumptions about foxes, rabbits, you know, how they interact with one another. Here are the interactions. Here are the parameters, things like growth rate, presence of foxes on the death rate, so effectiveness of foxes in catching the rabbits. No noise. We can add noise. Let me add noise to it. Some sigma. When I do the calculations again, look, the noise has such an effect that it actually goes to somewhere. If I introduce the bigger noise, what happens? So this is already a big progress above the just pure differential equations. I can actually do the, look at that. There's actually an equilibrium quickly. So it's computers give us that power, this incredible power. So now let's go back to the slides. Let me. Okay. So. You don't need to ignore the time dynamics. You can actually do the differential equations. But if there is no equilibrium, then it's difficult to derive sometimes the solutions, especially if the assumptions are changing. So the contribution of this work, the agent-based reasoning, it's a new methodology. It helps to overcome previous problems, and it departs from the traditional solutions to those methods that the problems involving populations. Artificial society models, they are agent-based. You can model things like trade, like migration, group formation, combat, interaction with environment, transmission of culture, disease, dynamics. And it has a long history. In science, typically, there is a time that is ripe for certain types of work, and computers have sped up that type of work because suddenly it becomes possible. But first attempts were done long ago. Here is quickly the history. But if you look at the history, you notice that this is the time when the first computers originated. When I was early 1980s, I was in the Netherlands then, people were playing the game of life on a computer. It was kind of looking at the neighboring cells and then putting X's or circles and deriving new things from that. This is probably somewhere there, you know, derived, proposed by that. These are the roots of the methodology. It was evolving by itself, essentially, based on assumption. And there's a long list of people who made contributions to that. Long line of developments. So agent-based models. The idea is that group behaviors emerge from interactions of individuals operating in some artificial environments. Individuals can be different. They don't need to be homogeneous. You can generate them. And you look at the behavior that emerges. It will become very clear when we start simulations. Or maybe let me run a simulation first to show you the idea. Then it's going to be easier to look at slides. Here is, for example, a simulation. You put essentially individuals in an aquarium, artificial aquarium. You have how big is it? 50 by 50, I think. You put natural resources. The yellow things are natural resources. They call it sugar. And then they put individuals in the beginning, and they let these individuals follow certain rules. For example, the rule is if you are in a certain place, eat all the sugar and grow, become healthier. And if you have eaten all the sugar, look around you. If you see a place with more sugar, go there so you can move. And then different individuals may have different metabolism rate, so they consume different amounts of sugar. And they can have different sights, so some of them can see like two steps ahead, some of them can only see one step ahead. So they are randomly generated with different properties, properties that are important for a given type of situation. In this case, I think they were studying migration. Let's look again. In the beginning, you see they are randomly put on the plate. Look at that. And then as the time goes, with the simple rules of behavior, they tend to settle in areas that have a lot of resources. That is the idea that, for example, the cultures, the early human cultures, were created in Mesopotamia, for example. Why? River valley, fertile soil, water. Most of the people live there. Early cultures, Mediterranean area, nice warm weather. You didn't need to use to heat your buildings. There was food, everything grew nicely if there was water, yes? And that's the idea, and you can see it in the simulation. You don't assume anything about uniformity. They are all slightly different. As you will see, that will become important for some type of questions, the differences. So let's go back to the presentation. I did that, I showed you that in order to kind of imagine what we are talking about here. So we want to discover the macro effects of micro mechanisms. The micro mechanisms are things like I told you. If you see sugar, eat it. If you see more sugar, you've eaten all the sugar, if you see sugar next door, go there, move. Yes. So these are the micro rules, and from that we can see the macro behavior. Macro behavior, like they tend to concentrate in areas where there's a lot of resources, a lot of sugar. The three basic ingredients are agents. These are the software agents, like they were represented by dots here. There's an environment, so like the 50 by 50 playground. And there are rules of behavior. The models are called artificial societies because you are dealing with a society. You have a society that you put in the beginning of in the playground of, let's say, 100 individuals. And rules of behavior. They're called laboratories where you grow social structures. Of course, you can do things like that in a garden. You can put plants, you can put bugs, you know, you can do it for real. But this is very inexpensive because you can just write a program that will run it for you. And you control perfectly the assumptions about the agents. And I'm not going to read this. This is a quote from the book, the beginning, what you observe, and then that you see certain effects, like you see that people start forming tribes of different cultures, they interact, they trade, they fight, they assimilate culturally, and etc. They have violent phases, peaceful epochs, migration happens in waves. I'll show you the simulations of that. And you can study phenomena like trade, so economics. You can study migration, what happens when there are certain rules, like, you know, you hear that in Germany they give good social, you get money for free. How do you behave like that? Yes, of course, you have different preferences, there are different individuals, some find it important, some find it less important, and then you see migration, for example. Group formation. When I was, I visited Rob years ago, it was late 90s, I think, or mid-late 90s, I told him you could study marriage, for example. You know, when you have a society when there is marriage, you marry an individual of opposite sex, and you could compare it to a society where there is no marriage. And he told me, over a glass of wine, well, what we want to do is we want to derive the concept of marriage. So like the society, you know, the individuals with simple rules of behavior, like, you know, we want to be healthier, for example, more rich. You want to observe that monogamy, for example, develops in that. That's an interesting idea, right? The question is, what do you need? What kind of rules of behavior do you need to observe certain phenomena? What is the sufficient set of rules of behavior to generate a certain phenomena? A good question, right? What drives something? So group formation, combat, when do you fight? With simple rules. Your neighbor is weaker than you and has more than you have. Fight, yes, simple rule. People are sometimes like that. Interact with the environment, so like with the sugar. You see sugar, you eat it, yes, and then you move. This is the nomadic type of cultures. A transmission of culture. So here are the rules. You see simulations of that. If you are, they have like two types of agents, blue and red agent. If I'm a blue agent and I have more red agents than blue agents around me, so different culture, then there is a certain probability that I will change my culture. Yes? Maybe the more other agents are around me, the more likely I am to change my culture. Things like that. And what happens? How did cultures evolve? You see the simulation. I think I have that. Propagation of disease. You could study, for example, spread of COVID with certain assumptions, like individuals who are closer than some distance, they don't have masks on them or whatever things, there's a certain probability that they will contract the disease. Yes? And you can study rules of behavior, like trying not to be in the neighborhood of one another. If you see somebody next door, move. If you can. If you cannot move, then I guess.
Then fine.
Well, we don't want to mix too much, you know, because it's science. It's like when you do experiments, you change one thing at a time. If you change two things, then you don't know for sure which one worked, maybe a combination, etc. So you don't want to change too many things. The rules must be simple. Disease, population dynamics. It's going to be best in pictures, in simulations. So agents are people, but they can be also animals or plants, of course. Agents have internal states. So they have states that are fixed, for example, sex, metabolic rate. Of course, we all have different metabolic rates. Some of us eat more than others. And that determines something. That determines the environment that you find yourself in. They did simulation, for example, you will see that over time, what happens is genetically the population changes, that the metabolism rate goes down in the population. Why? Well, people who have to eat more to live, they are less likely to survive. Simple. And the same, another thing that happens is in the societies, in one of the simulations, is the eyesight improves in the society. Eyesight is symbolic for how far you can see in the future. In their simulations is how far you can see the resources. So can you see one step around you? Can you see two steps? It turns out that the eyesight improves over time because people who can see further are less likely to die when the resources around them finish. Yes? Interesting thing. So there are some of them are changeable. So like you can change the economic preferences. You can change your wealth. In some of the simulations, you can accumulate wealth. So you have money or whatever, the amount of sugar that you keep. A cultural identity is changeable, so you can change depending on your environment. Health can change, you can get disease, so these are changeable characteristics. And there are rules, mating rule. If I see an individual of opposite sex next to me, and she is not yet, tight with another male, I marry with that individual, I have children. Simple rule. Of course, you can make those rules more complicated. In humans, the rules are probably quite more complicated. Combat rule: if I see somebody that I can think I can win with, and they have resources, attack. Yes. Or if I have butter and he has sugar, maybe we can make a deal. I give you some sugar, you give me some butter. Yes. Because you need both to be healthy. And you move around and interact with one another. So that's another thing. Vision. So you cannot see in, that's one of the rules. You cannot see in the diagonal direction. You can only see in this left, right, down, up. It's a possible rule. Of course, you can change that. Movement is look as far as your vision permits in the four directions, identify an unoccupied site having the most sugar, and go there. If the greatest sugar appears on multiple, select the nearest. Move to this site and collect all the sugar at this new position. That's a rule. Very reasonable one. And remember, you can invent the rules, but the game is to find a minimal rule that will produce certain behavior that we observe in societies. That's the idea. Because you want to explain, for example, how there are certain rules in economics that are empirical. Do you know the Zipf's law? Let's go to the Wikipedia. That's an interesting economic law that is purely empirical. This is Wikipedia, but let's go to the English Wikipedia. Or maybe here. Pravo Zipfa. Yes, Prosha is there. Okay, what happens is it's an empirical law that was... once formulated, where is there? Okay, this frequency of occurring of certain values is reverse proportional to its rank. It was observed in city sizes, for example. If you sort the cities from the largest to the lowest, then you will notice that the number of people is reverse proportional to the place on the list. And the fit is incredible. Here is the rank from 1 to 10, for example. And here is the... this is the logarithm of the number, like number of people. It forms a line. It's incredible, you know. And it is observed in many places. So the many people have tried to find an explanation of that. And typically the explanations were economic, like here is an equation that will generate it. Simon also had a paper on Zipf's law trying to explain it. And people usually try to explain it using equations and the kind of laws. But you can derive it with simulations. So the idea is, again, find a simple rule as possible that will generate that behavior. Then that gives you a high chance of understanding why that behavior happens. Of course, if the rule is reasonable. The rule has to be close to reality. But if something can be taken out of this rule and still generate that behavior, you take it out. You try to make it minimal, the rule. The life unfolds, the landscape, the aquarium where you do the work. You have essentially, it's a playground. That's what can be said in short. I'm skipping through these things, the details, because I think it's important to explain the idea. Object-oriented languages, they are very suitable for this. You know programming languages that are object-oriented, mainly. They are a reasonably new thing. I think this is 1980s, 1990s when they originated. They are very natural for programming those simulations, because objects are, agents are most naturally created as objects, and methods are rules of behavior. And objects have internal states that can be changeable or not, and the methods. So this is like artificial thing. They call it sugarscape, because they call that resource sugar, of course, as a joke, really. So here is a sugarscape consisting of, I think, 50 by 50. 50 by 50 in 1990s, that was kind of approaching the limits of what you could do. Today we can do it easily, probably a few hundred by a few hundred, easily. So it becomes more and more realistic and natural. So every place has natural resource, the sugar capacity, sugar regrows, that's like a natural resource. And agents are initially put on that landscape randomly. That's the way it looks when you blow up that piece. It's the concentrations of sugar. Rules of behavior like mating, combat, trade, environment rule. The sugar grows back to full capacity either immediately or over time, and grow back at a rate determined by the surrounding cells. You can make it as complicated as you want. Modeling natural resources. Natural renewable resources like food, for example. Agent environment, looking around, finding site, going to eat that site. Technology underlying that is object-oriented programming languages. It's a very natural methodology that you have experience in programming, so you know how methods work, how they change the values of variables. So you have this sugarscape, you drop agents in the beginning, and they start interacting and moving and doing things. So some of the things that they observe is they notice the emergence of social structures. So agents that were close to one another. I guess that's the idea here. It's not a simulation, but the idea showing groups of agents. They are not distributed equally, but they tend to be close to one another. That's, I think, the idea here. As the system evolves over time, there are certain phenomena, like carrying capacity. When you looked at these predator-prey models, foxes and rabbits, they observed in a certain environment, natural environment, that there are so many foxes that this environment can support, and so many rabbits. Because if there are more rabbits, they will not have enough food. So also the sugarscape, very quickly, there is a carrying capacity reached, and usually the population of agents stays around that capacity. They may fluctuate, but this is the capacity of that environment. If there are more, some of them will die in the longer run. Migration. Another thing that was observed is skewed wealth distribution. You know that the wealth is skewed very highly, especially in the United States. I've seen once a movie explaining it. I forgot what it was, but 1% of the people control more than half of the wealth of the United States. It's very, very skewed. It's probably also like a zip distribution, very, very skewed. So the question is, what causes the skewed distribution? As you know, that the left-wing people believe that you should distribute equally. Yes, it's a very admirable thing. In fact, most of us in our culture are leaning towards left slightly because of the Christian culture. We have compassion for our fellows. Yes, we want to help those who are in need. So that's quite natural for us, this left-wing. In fact, in Polish politics, left-wing was not that unpopular. Piłsudski was a socialist, you know. That's a left-leaning. So, in any case, one of the beliefs of the left wing is that societies are unspoiled until they are confronted with wealth, with possessions. So if you leave people, if you don't expose people to private possession, wealth, gold and money, then they are unspoiled and are going to form those ideal communist societies. That's an assumption that turns out to be completely untrue. The anthropologists, of course, they were quite suppressed in the anthropology community. They found very primitive societies somewhere in the Amazon jungle. They had no possessions. They were very poor, just whatever the jungle gave them. Did they have wars? Sure, they had wars. Did they kill other humans? Sure, they kill other humans. They had even habits like inviting a neighboring tribe to a big party, to a big feast. Refusing to come was not really an option because that would testify that you are a coward. They would invite that tribe, they would poison them or kill them at the party. And they had the wars. Do you know what they fought for? Not gold. They didn't know the value of gold and money. They fought for women. Essentially, they killed the men and got the women. That's, of course, a very bad assumption. But you don't need to assume that. Essentially, you assume only there is an agent who has some sugar. There are other agents who have butter, for example. And to live healthy life, you need a little bit of sugar and you need a little bit of butter. So you start trading. If I see somebody who has the other good, you start trading. Very quickly, they noticed in those simulations that the wealth was distributed unequally, skewed distribution. So it's something that essentially, it's not even maybe human nature, but it's something that essentially emerges from very simple rules of behavior, like trading. Also, they notice emergence of a lending network, like banks, you know, lending money. I need butter, but I don't have enough sugar to get it. So what I do is I borrow money from another agent, and I buy butter. I need to return that money with interest. For example, rules like that. And then they notice, of course, the banks are getting more rich, the distribution is getting skewed, and you notice those phenomena that you see in societies. And the question is, what is the minimal set of rules of behavior that will generate that behavior? Good question always. So different scenarios that they tested, simple, find food and eat it, sexual reproduction, combat, take resource by force, trading, credit networks, so the lending, social networks, disease, and all kinds of things. Simple, find food and eat it. You've seen a simulation. Essentially, these are the rules. You know, sugar grows back. Every agent moves, searches for the food. If the agent doesn't have enough food, then it dies, essentially. Sexual reproduction, so you have blue and red agents. Blue are, say, female, red are male, or vice versa. This is cultural exchange. So it's not sexual reproduction. These are not different sexes, but just different cultures. You put them randomly on the aquarium, and the question is, what happens? What will happen? If there's overpopulation, you move to less fertile regions, you live further from where there's action. Wars, combats, observation was localized wars. So not world wars, but localized wars. There's an observation that they had with simple rules of behavior. Trading, you just need two goods to eat healthy, you need two resources, and you trade one for the other. And that's, of course, observed in societies. They trade. They need salt, so they deal with tribes that are closer to the ocean who have salt. That's been definitely observed. You know, you can also do simulations of a supply and demand curve. How do you do that? Well, you look at the prices of selling and buying. of different agents, how much they are willing to pay, how much they are willing to sell for, and you can plot the supply and demand curves that changes dynamically, and there is always this equilibrium price. You let it decide, being decided locally, so no clearing houses, brokerages, just local interaction. When you aggregate that, you can plot the supply and demand curve. Credit networks, again, loan and due date, price, so interest rate. You need it, for example, to raise children. You don't have the resources yet. You can borrow. An observation was in that those simulations that there is specialization. Some agents became lenders. Some agents became borrowers. Most of the time they borrowed. Carrying capacity. No matter how many agents you throw, usually that equilibrium number of agents goes to a certain number. So in this simulation, after so many steps, typically it reaches with many simulations reach that carrying capacity. We observe that, how many animals can a certain forest sustain. This is with agent's vision. If you have higher vision, then the carrying capacity is smaller, interestingly. Because there is more, I guess, more movement and natural selection. Okay, this is the thing I told you about, that the initial vision were 3.5 and 2.5 initially. Mean vision increased over time and metabolism decreased. Essentially, those who were not seeing far enough or who needed more food were dying over time. Wealth distribution, here's the, as the steps are changing, it ends with this kind of distribution, very asymmetric. Migration, I think I have a simulation of that. What they observed is that migration happened in waves. So they threw these agents on SugarScape, and they noticed as the time went on, they were migrating to more fertile regions. Migration happened in waves. Why waves? Maybe because the resource needed time to regrow. So when the first wave ate the resource on the way, and the second wave didn't move on because there was no sugar here, no resource. But anyway, they observed waves. Seasonal migration, so winter and summer, migration happens during certain seasons. Or they are moving back and forth, like birds going to the north in the summer and south in the winter on a certain hemisphere. Pollution, when there is a polluted environment, what happens? Another thing. I guess what they observed here is that they had did they observe the hermits living far from others? I don't know. Social networks. These are very initial works. Von Neumann, that's the first half of the 20th century, they were defining the neighborhood different. Remember, the neighborhood in the simulation in the book is using this model, but you can also use this model. You can look around, really around. Social networks. Social networks, the lines are, I think, showing the connections between people. Spread of the disease, diseased agents are red, I think, blue are healthy. How different things affect disease pattern, migration, military conquest. There are many links to the book, to the code, to the simulation. What I want to do is I want to spend some time on actually playing with it. So let's look at the simulations, like the one that I showed you. Here was the simulation of this very simple scenario of migration, I guess. Migration. Where do people end up living? They form cities or cultures, like, you know, Egypt and Mesopotamia, with fewer people living in less fertile areas in the mountains, for example. In Scandinavia, fewer people live there. Okay, we've seen that. Let's look at the individual simulations. I guess window media player will be good for that. Again, they were thrown in randomly. There's a variety of things. The distribution of wealth, age, and tax. And these are things that are set. These are properties of the agents. These are vision and metabolism. As you see, vision goes up over time, and metabolism goes down. This is wealth, distribution of wealth. If you do longer, I think you get that asymmetry. And what is this? The number of agents. So you see there's this sustainability of the agents. It's getting flatter and flatter. Goes further. Where are we in the simulation? Almost here we are. May not be far enough to show us this distribution of health, of wealth, the asymmetric. These people are just happy, have low metabolism, living somewhere on their own, happily. Here's similar but different simulation. Do we have sound? No, there's no sound here. So you see here what do we see here? Wealth distribution as a function of time, vision and metabolism also changing, and the population going to that equilibrium number, which is sustained by the environment. This is a very simple aquarium, looking at the, I guess, economic aspects. But you could also do simulations of, for example, evacuation of the building. Suppose there is a fire here. You could build a model of this building and then put agents in different rooms, maybe classrooms, and start simulation. What happens when there is a fire alarm? How people move? You could easily have a door and then have a rule. Only one person can go through the door at a time. Yes, and going through the door takes a second, for example. Yes, and you could actually, people are going in the direction of the main door. And what happens? Is it clogged? Is there too many people? Is there a danger? You could do simulations like this. Let's look at this simulation. They were too close in terms of what they were doing. I wanted to look at something else. This is wealth distribution, so they are moving and eating, accumulating a wealth, I guess. I don't see that asymmetry yet, but look at that. Many people who have very little, and a small number of people who have a lot. So the question is, what is the rule that will cause that asymmetry? Maybe it's enough to have a simple rule like, you know, when you have something, you eat it or accumulate. Some simple rule that explains why there is asymmetry in wealth. And you can observe this wealth asymmetry everywhere in every society, rich and poor. that's the end. Gini index versus time. Gini is, I don't know what they are expressing by the Gini index. Gini index is a agreement, I think, between things, but I don't know what exactly it is. Lorentz curve, it has to do with dynamics, I guess. Equal wealth and Lorentz. Well, I don't know what it is. Migration. Look, they put all the population here, and then what happens is people start to discover the new place, create a colony, and over time they will create a new city. This is showing vision and metabolism, I think, also. They are the same. They are not changing. It's a simple simulation. Okay. What is this? Oh, this is migration in waves, remember? They were showing waves because the sugar has to regrow. And once they pass, they have eaten everything and it has to regrow before the next wave goes. Doing research in this type of work involves a lot of trial, like in case of studying strength of something, you essentially try to modify the rules and see what behavior you notice. You are looking for robust behavior that occurs in many cases, and in general you are looking for the minimal set of rules that create a certain behavior. Okay, we have randomly assigned agents. What happens here? Metabolism goes down, vision goes up, and you see where the people are. There was something, some change here that made people be at the border. I don't know what it was. We've seen this one. It's a pity I don't have simulations involving disease spread or fighting. When we were talking about this over a glass of wine in the evening, I remember I spoke with Rob about marriage, but he also told me then at that time that they were doing a lot of playing with that. And one of the things he said, well, we've done things that we haven't published and we probably will not publish, is when they had a society evolving somewhere, what they did is they removed a single agent who had particularly high vision, for example, and they noticed that removing individuals sometimes led to a complete different trajectory of the society. That's a scary thing, because when you do this kind of simulations, you're almost like playing God. You know, you can do things like removing exceptional individuals, and as we know, individuals change the society, sometimes single people. So he could do experiments like this, too. You have an aquarium where you can perform simulations that are, you can do anything, really. With software, you can intervene at different time steps, you can remove agents, you can add agents, multiply them, you can introduce rules, you can simulate even societies, religions. What if you had polygamy, you know, multiple women per man? You could do that too. The question is, what would happen with the other men who had no wives? Because roughly we have half of the people are men, half are women. Maybe wars would take care of that. In the wars, some of them would die. So you can do a lot of simulations. It's interesting what you can do with the computer simulations. You must have seen things like, let me show you, I prepared a small model with the Gini. Do I have it here? Yes. You know, when we have formal solution with equations, here I have in the x variable x, I have a complex equation. As you see, the equation is complex. The question is, what distribution will this have? We don't know really, yes? Because there's probably no theory telling us what the distribution will look like. We have theory for some special cases, like we know that if we have a sum of normal variables, the distribution will be normal. But what about if you multiply a sample from uniform by a sample from normal, and if that is larger than zero, then it's triangular plus beta. Otherwise, it's uniform times normal divided by beta. No idea what it will look like. But with simulation, we can actually derive it very easily. This is what it will look like. Simulation is an incredible tool, not only in agent-based simulation, but also simulation of distributions. There is a tool in Gini also, but we also put it on our website, BaseFusion. There is a tool known as Distribution Visualizer. Here it is. It's also demonstrating a simple equation that that looks like this. You know, it's a log of square root of some conditional function, and here is what it will look like. And you can look at it with more precise. You can change the number of samples. I can make it 100,000 samples if I want to recalculate. Voila, more precise. As you see, this is probably very close to normal. When you increase the number of samples, you get a better fit. Today, with what we have, there is less and less reason for having closed form solutions, so analytical solutions, solving equations. We can do a lot of things just by simulation. And simulation can get us to the arbitrary precision. Let me run this locally, because Gini has the same functionality here. Tools, distribution visualizer. I just want to, there is this the same thing. So we can recalculate 10,000 samples. I want to, it's a little rough, but if I make it million samples, which will take no time, really. Why don't I make it 10 million? I can approach to a smooth distribution with an arbitrary precision. Look at this. It is very, very close to what it in reality would look like if we had a solution for that analytical solution. So simulation really, is the primary thing. In fact, in research design, things that we talk about in this course, there are even methods based on simulation that are based on classical statistical tests. You can simulate things using a computer simulation. You can use methods like Bootstrap and a lot. Generally, they are called computer-intensive methods in research design. And agent-based modeling is one of those examples of studying the world in a very specific way. You create a model of that, a model that where nothing is really fixed. You don't know what the solution is going to be. You just let the agents interact, and they interact. You can start deriving the solution. So that was really it. That was what I wanted to show you. Again, it's more important in case of the agent-based modeling that you know about this idea, that, that this can be done. That's really more important because currently you don't have the need for that. The type of research that you are doing is not really doing this, but who knows what will happen in the future. So it's good that you know that things like that can be done. Definitely simulation based on stochastic sampling using computers, that's already closer to your work. You can derive, you can fit the distributions to your observations, you can perform simulations, you can try to guess what is happening in physical terms, propose an equation, you can perform stochastic simulation of that equation, etc. You can do that. Simulation in general modeling, it's almost like building something out of your concrete or your wood. You can build a construction and you can, with the software, you can simulate how strong is this going to be. In game playing, in game development, they use a lot of physics and also engineering when they have shooting and buildings, explosions, they actually can use engineering rules for constructions. Very good, so that's what I wanted to say. And that concludes the course. The only thing I haven't done is the computer-intensive methods. That's methods for using stochastic sampling, Monte Carlo methods, Bootstrap, 2-8 classical tests. If you ever feel the need for that, there is a good textbook for research design written for computer scientists. It's written by Cohen, and definitely recommend it. I have a few copies, just know where to find it. Let me know, and I'll be happy to give you advice. I think we've done all the rest. We've covered everything except for this topic. I guess maybe I spent too much time on the classical experiments this year. Great. I think I mentioned that. What I will do is I will remind you about this short report that you should write. It's really a formality, writing that report. I will accept everything as enough for passing this course. It's all is zaliczenie, nie zaliczenie. So you have all been present enough to have to pass this course. I think. Let me check. And the report is for you to get my feedback. If you, it's really up to you. Who is absent?
Łukasz.
Łukasz. Okay. So, okay. It's. You all have been absent at most one time, so no passing. So just send me that report. I'll send you an email reminding you what it is, and that's it. I'll give you a week or a couple of weeks' time, but if you need more, send me something pro forma that I will use to give
I
you a passing.
I sent you a report last week.
Yes, I got it, yes. Didn't respond because I was collecting the... So I'll give you feedback on that. So that's for you. It's an opportunity for you to think about your own research, how it ties to empirical work. Very good. So thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and I'm sure I will see you again somewhere.
Yeah.
The world is small. I see every time we go out with my wife in the city, we see an ex-student.
Maybe in the next year we choose... other classes. So
who knows? Or I will see you somewhere in the theater, or you know, somewhere. Every time we go out, we see some student, usually master or student, not doctoral, but we see somebody we know. It's a small town, and that's what I like about it also. Very good. By the way, there is one thing I wanted to recommend. You just recommend. You have all the obligation to attend. Wykłady specjalistyczne. If you still haven't done it, in our department, Wednesday, 1 o'clock, there's going to be a discussion on the topic of publishing habits in relation to the rules, you know, the points, etc. It's going to be a nice discussion. So I have sent an announcement to Agnieszka Sakowicz. She may send you that, pass it on to you. I hope they will count it as one of those. So if you need it, it's also an interesting topic because you can see what other older colleagues think about publishing, rules of authorship, what kind of other people, what kind of tricks other people are doing, unethical tricks to increase their citation rates, etc. So recommend it. Very good. So thank you very much.